Greg Collins, Substitute Teachers Lounge. It is the last day of April 2024, episode 258. And today, I will tell you, one of my pet peeves in business was always people didn't listen to what I had to say, and I probably didn't listen to what they had to say. And you know, that transfers over to the classroom too. So today we've got a special interview with a special person, and you're going to find out what is it costing you not to listen. All right, guys, Substitute Teachers Lounge is proud to have a guest here with us today. She's the author of the book, What Is It Costing You Not to Listen? It's Christine Miles. How are you doing, Christine?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
Good. Excellent. You know, the reason this is intriguing to me, I come across possibilities for interviews all the time. Most of them I don't pay any attention to, but this one, you got my support on this topic. Let me just say it this way. So let's start with this. And, you know, I told you that I used to be an accountant, and maybe that's why I have a pet peeve about not being listened to. So let's start with this. What got you into this? What made this a hot topic for you?
Well, we all have a story, as you just described, with your own background. Mine actually started very, very young. So I can remember as early as 5 that I was listening a little differently. And that largely stemmed from my mother, who suffered from some mental health issues.
Okay.
She just didn't feel seen, heard, understood. She had lost her mother from the childbirth. So she lost her mother very, very early. And I think it was just pain that most people didn't see. And I learned to pay attention. And what that did was listening differently made me a pretty emotionally smart child and consequently a young adult. And I started to overachieve in anything I tried to do, not because of any other skill other than this ability to kind of pay attention to what other people didn't and see what other people didn't see, whether that was on the sports field or overcoming my own academic challenges and so forth.
Sure.
And then I started realizing that this is also why a lot of people failed in relationships, because I started out my career as a family therapist. So I have that
background.
You know, so it's been my life's work, really, in some way, shape, or form. And I've really, in the last 8 years, decided we need to create a language around listening to solve a lot of the problems that are happening.
Okay, excellent. Me and you talked a little bit before we started, you know, and I came through the business field, and they are notorious for thinking that what they're getting ready to say is more important than what you're saying currently. You can just see it in their face. They're not listening to you at all. We'll turn a little bit to education now. Why do you think we don't teach our children how to listen with understanding?
Yeah, I think mostly because it's just the way it's always been. We've not ourselves been taught to listen. So why would we think to then teach it as a skill? It's almost like walking. We have legs, and unless you have a disability, you're born to walk, right?
Right.
The same, most people think, well, you have ears, you'll learn to listen. And it is a skill. It is a skill that can be developed and needs to be developed. And there are different ways to develop it. And I think a lot of educators are doing the best they can to try to institute some things in the classroom.
Sure.
But we don't have the real language around how to do it universally.
Do you recommend a formal program to teach it? Should we teach it like we teach kids how to speak?
That's my ultimate mission, is that I've been teaching adults for a long time, even though my background is working with family and children in many ways. And it's like learning to ski. Why would you wait till you're 45 when you can get on the slopes at 5? It's
right.
A lot easier. You're not as daunted by the mountain. We are so habituated to these bad patterns. You just described it. And I call those meetings, by the way, what you just described in your course.
Right.
Let me see what I can say after you say something. And it's a lot of time wasted. So there's lots of reasons to start earlier, but we need to formalize this in the classroom.
Okay. What age do you think that needs to take place?
Well, we learn to learn when we're little, don't we?
Okay.
We learn how to be learners. So this needs to start at the elementary level, in my opinion. And, you know, we can start as early as kindergarten, first grade to create the language. But really, you know, coming in around third grade is when I think the sweet spot is to really start to develop how to do this for kids and for teachers to be able to use it in the classroom so that they're not just teaching the students, but they have a classroom management tool as well.
Okay, well, let me ask you this, because I am looking over your right shoulder and I see the listening path back there. Do you have like curriculum in addition to your book?
Yeah, so several things are being launched this year. So as I mentioned, many adults have been taught how to listen, but we haven't figured it out for kids, but I committed to creating a program. Now, let me just say something. Teachers have enough to do. I'm not a teacher, worked with a lot of educators in both our business practice and over the years, and I don't think they need any more burden. Enough is enough. They have enough to do. So curriculum even makes me bristle a little, and I'm not a teacher. So these are lessons. And so there's a few things we have. We have a program, which is video lessons for kids. They're animated. I animated myself. I'm the teacher in the classroom of the listening skills. The teachers just get to implement them in the classroom. They don't have to do the work to teach the children.
Gotcha.
And then we have a game coming out as well. It comes in around fifth grade. So the program comes in around third grade. The game comes in around fifth grade, where they can practice the skills at a different level.
I like that. The games matter even in high school. I'm mainly sub high school now.
Okay.
And the games matter at all levels, or at least competition. If you can build some kind of competition into it. Okay. Well, then with that in mind, we got to think about teachers. If the teachers have never been taught to listen fully, how can we expect them to properly teach it to the children?
Well, I thought a lot about this. So let me take you back. I was trained as a family therapist, ready, at 22.
Okay.
I started knocking on people's doors at 22, said, "Hi, I'm Christine. I'll be your family therapist." It was my first job out of college.
Wow.
But I was trained by world-renowned clinicians from the Philadelphia Child Guidance Center, which is part of Pennsylvania Hospital in Philadelphia.
Okay.
I had no experience, knew nothing of what I was doing. But I was trained masterly from these people, these clinicians. So I've applied a lot of those principles. And what I've realized is it's too much to ask the teachers to teach this, which is why this is created so they're the implementers rather than the teachers. As I said, I'm the teacher.
Right.
And then those lessons carry, and the teachers can use the tools. We have a backpack that has all the physical tools for the classroom. And the analogy to listening to understand is, you wouldn't go hiking in the woods without tools or supplies or being prepared. We go into the conversational woods all the time unprepared. So we call it the listening path, which is the path to understanding and putting the right tools in the backpack for the students so that they can not only listen to pay attention, but listen to understand.
Okay. All right. You mentioned that with the four C's of the 21st century learning, listening is at the center. Can you explain that?
Yeah, so we know listening is a social emotional skill. We know that, right? We build our emotional intelligence through listening, but communication, cooperation, critical thinking, and creativity are the four C's. And when you think about, like, again, you talked about communication. We talk a lot about speaking, but not listening. So at the heart of all those skills is the foundation of that really is listening to understand. So when we put that in the center, we turbocharge the rest of those skills.
Okay. I like that. What are some helpful tips you think the listeners can use right now? How can they be better listeners? You know, what I think about, we can say all we want to that our students should be listening to us, but you know, they want us to listen to them too. So how do we do the balance there?
Well, and I imagine as you go in as a substitute teacher, you have, you know, you're developing relationships quickly. You got to get to that fast. So whether you're at the high school or the elementary level, right? So this is where that common language helps. But I'll just give an example of one of the tools that might be helpful.
Good.
Because it really is about how you create a dialogue of listening. So one of the tools is called a flashlight. And the reason is when it gets dark in the woods, you need a flashlight to see. And when you're When you're listening, the speaker is in the dark the longer you listen about what you heard. So you need to shine a light on what you heard to let the speaker know, I get you. So part of that really helps if you ask for that from the students as well as give that to students. So, you know, we ask people to repeat what we said a lot, but ask them to tell you, to shine a light on everything you said so that you really get the full story. And then you start to create common understanding. It's a really simple, underutilized thing between people. We don't do it very often. We tend to listen to respond rather than to listen to really summarize before we respond.
That's good. That's good. You know, I remember talking to students about Jeopardy and telling them, I've always thought that everybody has taken in the same amount of knowledge.
Yeah.
It's just that they're the ones that concentrate on listening and paying attention. And that's what makes them better players. One thing I'm struggling with is my age. I'm 66 now, and I could tell that my memory is just shot. So now I try to concentrate on listening more than I ever have. Sometimes I'll get some kind of remote story in my head from years ago, and then I can't. I tell the kids now, some of them, a lot of them I have taught since the sixth grade, substitute taught. And I would tell them, it's so bad now, I might call you by name when you come in, forget your name by the time you leave. Do you think, you know, I'm going off script a little bit here. I think listening might even help those of us that are struggling with our memory. What do you think?
Well, it does, especially if you have to repeat it in a meaningful way, not just like a rote way. First of all, names are tough for a lot of people to remember despite age. That's a
different
function. And a lot of people,
right.
I can't remember names. We have to take some of the pressure off of that because that's not really what matters to people. I always say, I won't remember your name, but I'll remember your story.
Right.
I'm more interested in what the person's sharing with me than just their name. And when we focus on the relationship versus just the name, that's really what people connect to. So when we go in and, you know, I'm not going to remember your name, but I'll remember you.
Right.
That's a different matter. So, but when you have to say back that's what Jeopardy is, right? What put it in the form of a question and then repeat it back.
Right.
So that's part of how you listen to understand is the exchange of what's happening between two people, not just a one-way endeavor.
All right. Let's make it specifically for substitute teachers. Now, teachers, rightfully so, get paid more than substitutes. They work harder than substitutes. I've had some long-term jobs. And I know how hard it is just over like a six-week period.
Yeah.
But the one thing unique about the substitutes, they actually meet more students on an annual basis than the regular teachers do because we're bouncing around to different schools or even different classes within the same school. Do you see that as being unique? Do you think substitute teachers should have a few ideas in their back pocket about how to get them to listen to you?
Well, I think that all teachers, whether substitute or regular, need the language. It's unfair to say go in a classroom when you don't have the credibility, right? You have to build credibility like that.
You do.
And so that's a big part of it. So it's really hard. And my understanding from listening and talking with a lot of teachers is it's harder than ever to get kids of all ages to pay attention because their expectations of needing to pay attention have changed based on the digital devices. So they come into the school in the classroom with a different mantra in their brains anyway. So if you don't have that language, it's really hard to universally get people to draw young and older kids when you're in the classroom. So if we can just create this language, I think it solves a lot of problems for both substitute and regular teachers, as you call them in the classroom. Yeah.
Okay. I like that answer. It leads me to something else. And maybe this would be a good question to close with because it's going to be it might require a little thought.
Okay.
I have noticed that my favorite group to teach was middle schoolers. You know, the sixth graders were like just huggy and impressionable. And it's not like that anymore. And I partially blame it. I'm a assistant volleyball coach this year. Okay. And the group of girls that are juniors, it was my first long-term job when they were in the sixth grade. So I've known them 5 years, really six school years. Mm. And I've told them, I said, you guys were the best. And I blame the COVID break a little bit because they just missed out on that maturity. And the kids, I hate it to say this, I've seen it in both the classroom and on the volleyball court. That age group just seems more, I don't want to call it disrespectful. That's too strong a word, but just I don't care about anybody but myself. And how do we get our listening emphasis to go over to kids like that? Well, I'll be honest. I there was one class I told her I'd never be back, and I hadn't done that in 6 years.
Yeah. So let me tell you a story.
I would love a story.
So when I was 28, I was involved in a car accident.
Okay.
That changed my life. I had 3.5 years of chronic pain that went acute. I was 31.
Wow.
So I was playing, my career was on the up. Tech, you know, as it should be in your 20s. I was at playing U.S. field hockey level field hockey. It was in the top 60. Big difference.
Okay. Okay. Nice.
I will say I'm very proud of that. The 16 and 60.
Heck yeah.
So, but I went on a dime. From 28 to 31, chronic pain, still playing. Couldn't pull up my shorts. Went to a doctor.
Oh, man.
My world, it fell. Right.
Oh, my goodness.
When COVID happened, when the lockdown happened, I was doing a virtual event for an international company that was holding the first virtual summit with global leaders from around the world to talk. I couldn't believe I was talking to Germany, Japan, blah, blah. Everybody was in their office. And I went, I've been through this before, but I felt I was by myself. And I went, the world does not know what they're in for.
Right.
Because I knew the pain of being forced into shutdown. And I was in a lot of physical pain too, but this has changed us all as human beings. And I can't imagine what it must be like for those young people who were forced into their homes, shut down, not connected, isolated. So we are dealing with the tsunami effect, I believe. The wave went out.
Sure. No doubt.
And so we have to help them reconnect and find a way to want to connect. And this is not there's not a one size fits all solution here, but I think we have to create moments in classrooms and in schools where that's taught and they can see the benefit. One of the things the game does is that it helps kids and adults, by the way, because we have this for adults as well.
Sure. Yeah.
Teach them how to really talk about experiences. So while the idea is to learn how to listen, the practice is really also being able to share experiences and stories while you're doing that listening in a meaningful way where you're finding the meaning of the story, not just what happened.
Right.
So
right.
If we don't reconnect, that's a very long way of saying they are traumatized and we have to help them find that connection again because they are used to thinking, how do I just get through this?
Yeah. You know, there's a part of me that I told my wife this last night. I really think that a lot of those kids too, they got more structure from their teachers than they did from whatever parents or guardians they were living with. And when they were thrust into that situation for a year and a half, it made such a difference. My goodness.
Well, the number of calls I was on were good. Of course, parents that love their kids were there in the corner while they're on a meeting because they're trying to tasks. So you have those, then you have other situations where the parents are dealing with their own stuff and they're traumatized and not parenting in the same structured way. So this was universal. Socioeconomic.
Oh, for sure.
It wasn't just about the neglected parents. It was really about all parents because we were trying to balance that kind of world and it didn't go well.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. So let's close with this. I do another podcast with my preacher, and I'm not going to ask you a religious question. Don't worry about it.
That's all right. I'm just thinking you're such an overachiever, Greg. Like, come on.
Anyway, if you saw me as an accountant, you probably wouldn't say that.
Well, you were probably good at the math. I'm going to
give you a statement that we close all of our shows with, and let you answer this, or let you just make a statement. Close us with a profound thought of the day. In your case, obviously, having to do with listening, what would you say is the most profound thought that you want to leave our listeners with?
Listening is a gift, giving the gift of understanding. That's what we're doing. We're giving a gift to understand can change the world.
Good, good. I mentioned it, but I want you to mention it. Mention the name of your book again.
The book is What Is It Costing You Not to Listen? Thank you for getting the title right, by the way. I appreciate it.
I wasn't gonna mix it up.
And the way we're teaching adults and children, the classroom program and the game and so forth, is called the listening path. The path to understanding, the listening
right,
path.
Right. That's fantastic. Thanks for being here with us today. Maybe we'll do a follow-up one of these days. And after you've sold 30 million copies of your book, we'll get back together and see how things are going. So guys, that was Christine Miles, and go out and I know I saw it on Amazon. What Is It Costing You Not to Listen? And listening's one of my pet peeves too. So I'm glad we had you here today. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. As we close, always remember that you can email your questions to gregcollinssubstitute@gmail.com. Please join our Facebook group, Substitute Teachers Lounge, where we'll share ideas and thoughts about each week's show. See you next week. Music provided by Ben Sound.